Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues on this Wednesday, March 7th. I'm going to introduce the guys in studio with me here in just a second. Folks, I want to remind you that we have Share-a-thon coming up. It's not too far away, April 17th through 19th, just around the corner, our In God We Trust Share-a-thon. And so we are coming to you, our listeners, asking you if you have listener stories. Now, what does that mean? We record stories, testimonies, if you will, about how American Family Radio has been making a difference in your life. And so if you have a story, a short kind of testimony about that, we'd like you to call in and let us know. And we might share your story on the air to spotlight the difference that American Family Radio is having across America. Have we motivated you to become more involved in the culture war? Do you have a story about how AFR has impacted you in an extraordinary way? What does American Family Radio mean to you and your family? Those kinds of things. We encourage you to call. Here's the number, 877-876-8893, 877-876-8893. That is a toll-free number. Not sure that matters anymore since most people have smartphones, but please call, share your story with us. You'll be prompted through that phone conversation. You'll be able to record your testimony, and then we may air it prior to and during our In God We Trust Share-a-thon coming up April 17th through the 19th. Well, joining me in studio is Walker Wildman, assistant to the president. Walker, welcome.
Glad to be here.
Good morning to you.
Yeah. Good morning.
And your dad is... he's not in the chair you're sitting in, the captain's chair.
That's right.
He is in New York preparing to go to Israel with a group of about 100 people. I, you know, he mentioned that the other day, and I thought, wow, I didn't realize it was so many folks going to Israel. So
yeah, they take two buses, I think, this time. And I just talked to him earlier. He said it just began snowing in New York.
Yeah.
And but hopefully that doesn't set off their schedule at all, and we may... may update you next week as far as how the trip's going. Maybe get some pictures.
Yeah, get some pictures.
Post on Facebook.
Maybe some commentary. We'll find out. There's quite a bit of time difference between where we are and Israel. Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now. Good morning to you, Fred.
Delighted to be here and not in New York.
Oh yes, that listen.
But that nor'easter. I there's a lot of folks that are going to suffer through this. They're still without power from the most recent storm several days ago.
And that involved mostly rain but high winds, right?
Rain but high winds. I think, was it on Monday, 300,000 were still without power in that northeast corridor?
Because it was a couple of million, wasn't it, when the first storm first hit?
On the weekend, yeah. And now they've got this one coming in. Where your dad is, I think there's a chance of up to 12 inches in New York. That's a pile. Think of New York, busy.
Yeah.
And then as you go further inland where that colder air is more established, 18 inches, 2 feet, not impossible.
Wow.
So it's a whack. Wow. It really is.
And that's just in how long is the duration of this storm supposed to be? So like 12 to 18 inches in how long?
In a 24-hour period.
That's insane.
And what was someone was saying this morning, 1,000 flights. They started canceling flights last night.
Right.
And hopefully it'll get through so that the flights can resume maybe tomorrow morning. Yep. Airports are pretty good. They got their own snow removal equipment.
Right.
And they get the runways open just as soon as the heavy storm passes.
So anyway, nor'easter coming in.
Yeah.
And every time I try to remind myself when I complain about the weather here in Mississippi where our flagship station is.
Uh-huh.
For you, if you're just now listening, American Family Radio has 184 stations, and I think 38 states, but our flagship station is in Mississippi. I'm a native New Englander, so I do complain quite a bit during July and August, and gripe about it. On the other hand, during February, March, up in the northeast or north, the Dakotas, where what have you, north of the Mason-Dixon line, they have to complain about this kind of thing. So it's choose your poison, I guess.
That's right.
All right. Fred, what kind of news we got going?
Well, let's talk a little bit about the primaries in Texas yesterday. They kind of led off the country in this group of primaries that will occur, obviously, leading up to the election this fall. Yesterday in Texas. Now, if you're reading the headlines from the results of the primaries in Texas yesterday, you will probably get something like this. Dems flood Texas primary. And what they're talking about is that Democrats registered the highest voter turnout in 16 years during yesterday's Texas primary. So the indication, the analysis, the political pundits are all saying this is a result of the energy the Democratic Party has across the country. They feel optimistic. Again, I'm quoting the pundits here. They feel optimistic that because of what they perceive or what they want the country to perceive as chaos in the White House, anger at Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, and the Republicans, that they are going to enjoy. But the very next paragraph in a story I was reading this morning says, however, it's not likely to translate into, at least in Texas, any changes. The Republican turnout yesterday was every bit as strong or stronger than the Democratic turnout. And so listening to some of the comments coming out of Texas over the last 24 hours, hey, they're energized too. And you know, the history is, and we've talked about this before, history in midterms is that the party in power does suffer some losses.
Right.
Because it's not the same energy as the previous election.
Well, and dissatisfaction with things that might be happening,
yeah,
directed towards the party in power.
That's right. So, however, I think more and more Americans are aware that this particular president is unfairly treated by the media. We did, we reported yesterday about the latest stats coming out of the Media Research Center, where 91% of the coverage of the major networks of Donald Trump is all negative.
Right.
You know,
it's unprecedented, according to MRC.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think a lot of Americans are saying, wait a minute, there's some good things that he has done here. He's doing his best. Now, they may be blaming some Republicans, you know, for not doing away, for instance, with the Senate filibuster,
right,
all of those sorts of things. But I really do believe most conservative Americans are not blaming Donald Trump for things not getting done up there. I mean, he goes out there and he says, I'm a pathway to citizenship for 1.8 million dreamers. That's a better deal than what the Democrats were offering.
Right.
So he's got that on his side. He wants to do infrastructure. He wants to build a wall on the southern border. So if there's anything, there's a bit of the President Donald Trump is downtrodden, even by his own party. Let's get out there and support him.
Right.
So yesterday, there was a good turnout by the Republicans also. Even the liberal media coverage of the results, they don't think Senator Ted Cruz is in any trouble of losing. He had pretty good competition in the primaries, but there's not too much concern that there's going to be much of a turnover, if any, Republicans in Texas.
I'm looking at the New York Times results from the Texas primary yesterday, and for the media got really hyped up and excited about the Democratic energy amongst voters there. I'm not sure there was such thing ever. It may have been a manufactured narrative, because I'm looking at just the Republican senatorial primary versus Democrat primary.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans had over 500,000 more primary voters show up. And the reason I say that's important is because that'll translate into November.
That's right.
They're going to have to come up with 500,000 more votes is what it looks like. And now I know that turnout in primaries is much lower than generals. Primary voters are your more, they know what's going on.
Right.
So some more Democrats will turn up in November, but I'm not sure it'll be able to bridge the gap between what we saw yesterday. That's just with Senator Ted Cruz on the Republican side, and then can't pronounce the Democratic senatorial candidate who lost. Who won the Democratic primary yesterday?
Well, and I think sometimes in a state like Texas, which has been reliably red for the Republicans for quite a while, that might change as demographics shift. You know, with more immigration from Latin America tend to vote blue Democrat. Mm-hmm. But one of the things about a state like Texas is that a lot of times you will have in maybe two or three counties, which, you know, like where Austin, Texas is, you know, a college town, that you will have a concentration of blue voters because they dominate that county or they dominate that city. And that sometimes that will jack the numbers up too. Mm-hmm. So you say, you know, 1.5, I'm looking at an article from The Hill, 1.5 million voted in the Republican primary, 1 million Democrats in the party's primary election. I'm not saying all of those are in, you know, in Austin for the Democrats, but they are concentrated. So that sometimes will skew the numbers. You think, wow, 1.5 against 1 million, it's, you know, you add several more million, they might catch them. Well, they might, you know, dominate in Austin, but they're not going to dominate across Texas. You're going to spread that, you know, a million out in three counties.
Yeah, and I think the metro areas, Houston, the eastern right. side of Houston would have a lot of Democrat support amongst right. African-Americans in that city. Likewise, in Dallas, a growing and politically powerful Hispanic vote
right.
in that city. So you have to look at those cities, but there are a whole lot of folks that live elsewhere in the Wacos of this world and that sort of thing. San Antonio has a large Hispanic,
right.
And I think they've had a Democrat mayor.
Yes.
Who has been mentioned as a possible presidential candidate someday.
Raul Castro, maybe, I think is his name.
Yeah.
Not Raul Castro. That's the brother of Fidel Castro.
I was going to say, when did he get into the country?
Yeah. I think there's two, they're like twin brothers or something. There's
yes.
something kind of
yeah.
crazy there, but reliably Democratic. City.
Yeah, I bottom line, I don't think there's going to be a big change in Texas, but we just wanted to alert people to the headlines that they're
right.
going to see mm-hmm. out there about how well the Democratic turnout was.
Fred, you're not implying that the media will skew the picture here and twist the picture.
I'm not implying, I'm stating it.
No implying necessary.
You know, I will say, though, that it is important on behalf of Republicans to keep Texas and Florida.
Yes.
Keep Texas and Florida when it comes to November mm-hmm. In years to come.
Right.
Maybe even decades to come.
Yeah, because conservatives need to
yeah.
go to the polls and vote.
And we saw President Trump win Pennsylvania and some of those, I guess you could say, swing states mm-hmm. in 2016. Mm-hmm. But he was unique because he was, I don't know what you call it, but he appealed to the Rust Belt
right.
and the blue-collar workers there, which not every Republican can do.
No, it was very
appeal
unique.
To them. So
he may have been the only one who could have pulled that off.
Yeah, and if he didn't pull off, you know, Pennsylvania and some of those others up there, then Florida and Texas may have not mattered. But
right.
With Florida and Texas plus those, he was able to pull it off pretty handily. But you got to keep that.
It's going to be very interesting. There's a special election, I think, for a congressional seat in Pennsylvania next week. And Joe Biden, I believe, was there yesterday, former vice president. And I believe President Trump is going to be there in the next few days campaigning. So that may be a bit more accurate of a test as to where we are. You mentioned Pennsylvania.
Right.
That the you know Republicans have to stay strong in Florida and Pennsylvania and North Carolina and certainly Ohio. But, you know, I don't consider myself a political expert, but I do believe Donald Trump is a tremendous asset for the Republicans. I do believe he's going to be out on the campaign trail a lot over the next several months because I've seen him in action even in the last month or so. He'll go to – and he's been out promoting tax reform and the tax law. He goes to where the blue-collar workers are, and he gets this – absolute, you know, the welcome wagon is out from people, blue-collar workers, who often have voted Democrat in the past, but they like what he's doing, which leads us to our next story. Some people are scratching their head. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, if he hasn't already, is going to be announcing today, apparently the major plank for the Democrats in this fall's election is to start reversing some of the tax cuts in the tax law. Now, he's going to be out there, and we've seen a preview of this. He's going to be out there saying, we're going to return to the tax levels for corporate America. We're going to return to levels, what's it called, the death tax?
The inheritance tax.
Yeah. And so it's going to be class warfare. It's something that worked for Barack Obama for 8 years, and so Schumer and the Democrats are going to return to that. But you know what? The workers out there, again, under tax reform, corporate America shared the benefit very quickly with their workers. You know, we've had people getting $1,000 bonuses, $2,000 bonuses. What was it? Facebook, Apple, all of those companies.
Raises.
They were getting raises. So not only did they get bonuses, but they're seeing more in their take-home pay. And I think those corporations can go out there and say, well, because of the tax break we received, we sent down the benefit to you folks. And so Chuck Schumer, the Democrats, are going to go out there and say, no, we're going to return the high taxes on these companies again. I don't think that's a winning element.
Well, here's where I think it is and isn't on what you're saying. Because remember, we were just talking about last week about Dianne Feinstein, okay, not getting the support of Democrats in that state.
California Democratic Party.
Here's where I think for the people you're talking about, Fred, I think that is not a winning issue.
Mm.
But it is a winning issue for the Bernie Sanders crowd.
Yes.
And I think this is further evidence that in the minds of the Democratic Party establishment, they believe their future lies further to the left, towards socialism, the politics of envy, sometimes it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a tragic for the Democratic Party, and it's a tragic miscalculation.
Mm-hmm.
They believe the way to political success in the future is to appeal to the more radical elements, and that is where they're going. But for the people who are traditionally Democrat, who are like Dianne Feinstein, who I've, you know, for people who think that we're just, you know, one political party in terms of our beliefs, I've on a number of occasions applauded Dianne Feinstein, especially with foreign policy and some of these other issues, for her balanced approach to some of these issues. For the traditional Democrats who are that kind of person, this is not going to be a winning issue, but it's going to draw radicals and drive the Democratic Party further to the left. And I think that's a big mistake for them going forward.
I think Trump is splitting the Democratic base.
I think that's right. That's a good way to put it.
The tariffs are going to help the blue-collar workers in this country, which traditionally have been supporters of the Democratic Party.
Unions.
When he goes out on the stump, when he's campaigning out there, he's got union people with him.
Right.
Standing up there with him and praising him for what he is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not a politician, but he's very smart in
right.
his politics.
And you know, one thing that we haven't seen, at least make large headlines, is businesses, CEOs, corporations bashing President Trump's policies, you know, because leading up to 2016, you know, all the CEOs would sign on to the letter supporting the homosexual agenda, this or that. But I think since they've gotten these tax cuts, many of these corporations are saying, look, we've got our tax cut, we're making more money, our workers are making more money, business is doing well, I'm just gonna be quiet. Because why would you criticize a president who gave you and everyone else tax
mm-hmm.
cuts?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's caused the business sector to at least maybe ease off of their social engineering that they've been doing.
You know, you mentioned that the Democrats likely are going to lean towards the Bernie Sanders crowd.
Yeah.
But here's the problem. The rest of the world, the pendulum is coming back.
Yeah.
Because we talked on Monday about the election in Italy.
Right.
You know, it's the center to right parties that did so well in Italy. They're doing well in France.
Did well in France a couple of years ago, too.
Yeah, in Germany. So there's a swing away. I've said it before. Socialism looks good on paper sometimes.
Right.
But when it gets applied to political policy, everybody starts saying, wait a minute, I didn't think it was going to work out this way, that I'm taking home less pay. My family is struggling financially to pay for people who don't want to work.
Yeah, and that is also true about very liberal immigration policies,
mm-hmm.
where it's basically y'all come,
yeah.
and now they're understanding, you know what, it's not xenophobia to say we want to restrict the number of people coming into our country who are not from here,
mm-hmm.
and those who do come here, they need to blend in and to assimilate. They also need to have skills that we can use, and they need to have paying jobs. We don't want them just being taking welfare, whatever the European countries call that, you know, their social safety net. So you're exactly right, and it's odd that we've always said that Europe was a few years down the road ahead of America in terms of its progressivism, quote unquote, and its very, you know, liberal policies on social issues. Could it be that they're also a few more years down the road in terms of the pendulum swinging back?
Yeah.
Because what you're talking about is an interesting phenomenon. And even though someone like Angela Merkel might survive in Germany, you wonder, is the handwriting on the wall? Maybe it's not this election. Maybe it's the next one.
Hey, listen, yeah, you got to look at what drove the Brexit vote
right
in Britain. And I mean, there are people, your regular hardworking citizens there. I mean, look at London and what is it? And also Birmingham.
England.
England.
Yeah.
No go zones.
Right.
Please.
Those were denied. These countries have been denying that for a long time.
Yeah.
But now it's become, everyone's going, listen, it's common knowledge.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Explain what that
Sweden,
is.
Sweden. Basically, those are areas where, for the most part, Islamic immigrants coming into the country. Remember, the policy in the European Union countries, which is why the Brits are voting to get out of that. The immigration policy was anybody lands up on the shore gets to stay.
Yeah.
And the state has to look after them. So they were coming across on boats from France into Britain. These are Islamic people coming out of North Africa,
right.
coming out of Syria, Turkey.
They make their way in through Europe. And get over across
hey,
the channel.
Why not? As soon as I arrive on the shore, according to European Union laws, you have to take care of me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And because of political correctness, you better not say anything against the way I behave, including sexual assault on young girls
mm-hmm.
in places like Germany. Remember, was it?
And the mutilation. We don't have to be gross about this.
Yeah.
The kind of mutilation they do on
Yeah.
young girls.
Mm-hmm. Remember the New Year's parties? I think it was in Germany 2 years ago, where dozens and dozens of young German girls were sexually assaulted.
Mm.
And they didn't want to talk about it in the media because it went against their politically correct view of the world.
Yeah, you're being Islamophobic.
Right.
Exactly. So now they're dealing with that reality. So I think you are seeing the pendulum turn on immigration policy, on economic policy, a movement back towards a more capitalist type mentality in Europe, because they understand capitalism leads to jobs.
Well, their economies are stagnant
yeah.
in a lot of
right.
places. France and Germany is, you know, they're big exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some other countries, you know, like Poland, I think are doing well, but countries like, you know, Greece and Italy, you know, my heritage, Their economies are stagnant.
Yes.
You know, and so they're looking at ways, how can we make things better?
Mm-hmm.
Capitalism's a place to start.
Yeah, and unfortunately, sometimes people have to live under their what they think is a great idea
yeah.
to actually realize it's not such a good idea.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And we've said before,
and that's what's happening.
Reality is a brutal teacher.
Yes.
Yes.
And so you may want to try something that in the real world really doesn't work. But kind of like going to college in America. You could say, we don't want you saying that. That offends me. Well, you know what? The real world, Snowflake, doesn't
right.
work that way.
That's right. Right.
And reality is a brutal teacher.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we have more great news, folks. Some of the wonderful things that are happening in our country. This is Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We'll be back in a few.
You guys are doing a great work here, and I've seen lots of influences in my own life.
We're collecting stories of how God is using American Family Radio.
It inspires me to fight the good fight of faith.
Would you take a moment to share your story? These brief stories serve as big encouragement to those who partner with us financially and to those who are considering partnering with us. Phone 877-876-8893. That's 877-876-8893.
You shall not murder. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. This is the sixth commandment of the Ten Commandments. You shall not murder. We are asking schools all over America to put this on their marquees, put this on their signs out in front of their school for 1 week to remind America's students that innocent life is precious. Help us spread the word about this campaign to your friends and family. Please go to our website, afa.net, and sign our open letter to America's schools. We need to proclaim this message, you shall not murder, across the land. Why? Because gun control alone will not solve matters of the heart. We need our young people to understand that murder is a violation of God's law, and also it's a violation of the laws all across this land. So help us. Go to afa.net and spread the word.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. A condo association in Port Charlotte, Florida, ordered a ladies' Bible study group to cease and desist. The group had been meeting in a commons area of Cambridge House, but the condo association passed a resolution banning any religious activity in public areas. And just to be sure residents got the message, they posted a giant sign on the community organ, "No Christian music allowed." Residents could belt out the theme song to Frozen, but they were not permitted to sing Amazing Grace. First Liberty Institute is representing Donna Dunbar, the Bible study leader. They say the religious cleansing violates the Fair Housing Act, calling the Bible study ban discriminatory. Neither the condo association nor its management company responded to my telephone calls. But it seems to me if management allows residents to play poker in the social room, they should also allow folks to hold a Bible study. I'm putting my money on the church ladies. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman. I am joined in studio by Fred Jackson, who's news director for American Family News and One News Now, and also Walker Wildman, assistant to the president. We are now joined by Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst, general counsel for AFA, and also host of the Hamilton Corner. Like, how you doing? Good morning.
That,
yeah,
good,
you know, morning. What? Every time good I hear morning. Every time I hear the movie voice guy or that kind of thing, I say to my wife sometimes, I could do that.
I think you could.
I could do that. I could, you know, get my voice in the right shape, you know, and make a few bucks on the side doing, you know, movie trailers, stuff like that. So, and host of the Hamilton Corner.
I think we need to get that recorded so I can play that every day.
Yeah, okay.
Before I come on.
All right. Yeah, you know, your sarcasm's not.
No, I'm serious. I'm serious. I like it.
All right.
I don't have that kind of voice.
Well,
I tend to squeak.
When you get excited. I always tend to to shift back to my Boston accent when I get excited. I want to park the car at Harvard Yard. You know, that's what happens to me when I start getting excited. That's wicked awesome. All right, Fred.
I have no comment.
Yeah. All right, no, Walker, you had something you wanted to bring up because we want to use our legal eagle here and get some insights on legal
matters. Before I pitch a question to Abe about some news, I wanted to remind our listeners that we are live streaming on Facebook and YouTube. So if you'll visit the Today's Issues Facebook page, you can watch the show there, or you can visit YouTube and type in Today's Issues Live and watch the show with those two places. But Abe, yesterday, I believe, or earlier this week, Mississippi, our home state here, passed a 15-week abortion ban.
That was yesterday.
The legislature did. Mm-hmm. Governor hasn't signed it yet. He's expected to. But tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, so just yesterday, and I had Representative Andy Gibson on from the 77th District in Mississippi because he presented the bill in the House. It is the first measure passed by both houses of any state legislature in the country banning abortions after 15 weeks. And I said this yesterday, I say it again, it's kind of, I'm conflicted because on one hand, I believe very strongly that life should be protected from conception to natural expiration. So placing an arbitrary line in the sand as to when we're going to protect it is kind of rubs me the wrong way. But at the same time, knowing the onslaught of the murder mills in our country and the millions, literally 18 states worth of babies, the numbers of babies who've been aborted in America are equivalent to 18 of our states.
Wow.
Total population. Yes. Hmm. Knowing that, any measure to curtail baby murder, in my opinion, is a good bill. So Mississippi has put itself at the forefront of the pro-life movement with the passage of this particular measure yesterday, passed in the House initially, then passed in the Senate yesterday. There were some technical amendments made in the Senate, but Representative Gibson said those things are technical. They don't change the substance of the measure. The House will concur in those in short order, so that it should be on the governor's desk in a day or two here. And so the thing that really drew me in addition to the courage of the Mississippi state legislators in passing this particular measure, Representative Gibson said that they'd spent significant amounts of time and deliberated the issue sufficiently so that he believes it will withstand any type of legal challenge. Because, of course, you can expect people who are in favor of killing children, go figure.
Yeah.
Even the owner of the sole abortion clinic in Mississippi said that she plans to sue to challenge the constitutionality of this measure. But Representative Gibson said that he is confident that this measure will survive any type of constitutional or legal scrutiny.
Well, now, a lot of people, we've had Roe versus Wade for so long, the Supreme Court decision in 1973, legalizing abortion, striking down laws, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, we've had that for so long. I think even a lot of Christians think, well, then how in the world could this kind of law pass constitutional muster, legal challenge? But a lot of people don't know that Roe versus Wade and then Planned Parenthood versus Casey, I think, which was a few 92. Years later, 92. Mm-hmm. Okay, that there is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, my language may not be exact, that the Supreme Court itself included kind of a loophole.
Yes.
So explain that.
So here's what you're getting at. First of all, 1973, Roe versus Wade was decided by the Supreme Court. Its companion case, people often forget this one, is Doe v. Bolton.
Right.
Just to be candid about it, those opinions were written horribly in terms of legal stature. And the reason why is because there is no constitutional right of privacy that would allow you to kill babies. Mm. It doesn't exist in the Constitution, so the courts made it up. And so subsequent courts have had to acknowledge that to a degree. So then you have the 1992 case, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which basically presented a measure of keeping an abortion clinic available because the court has recognized this right to privacy. So you can't have this law in Planned Parenthood versus Casey because it would impinge upon the right of availability. But in that opinion, which was written by Anthony Kennedy, he creates a legal loophole for challenges like the ones presented that give states the ability to restrict abortion as they see fit. So the Mississippi legislature, as they did House Bill 1523, which has also survived legal challenge, by the way, they said, okay, we hear what the court said. For example, the Mississippi legislature heard the courts in Obergefell, then ends up passing House Bill 1523. The legislature now has said, we heard Justice Kennedy's opinion on this matter, which got a majority of justices to concur in, and so we are going to pass this particular measure. And I think this is a bit of wisdom operating on behalf of the Mississippi legislators, because by crafting the legislation the way they did, any legal challenge will by necessity require the courts to review Roe versus Wade, Doe v. Bolton, and Planned Parenthood versus Casey.
Wow.
So if you do challenge it, please be aware that you could be putting the whole ball of wax in jeopardy.
I just have to say that Mississippi may not be leading in many things, but pro-life legislation and religious liberty, First Amendment issues, they are leading the way, and I would even argue they're even ahead of Texas. Mm. You know, we always look at Texas every other year because they pass some great conservative bill, the governor signs it, and they have all their talking points together, and everybody goes, man, wish I lived in Texas as a Christian or a conservative, but Mississippi, Fred, has been leading the way on many of these issues the past few years.
The lead in courage, too.
Yes,
that's right.
Absolutely, under tremendous pressure.
And the governor, Governor Brian, deserves a lot of credit for that because he has been out in the front unapologetic about this and in fighting for the life of the unborn.
Matter of fact, let me read his statement. This is from One News Now.
And as you're pulling up the statement, let me add this in. Part of the genius in this is that this is passed following Gorsuch's appointment to the High Court.
Right.
So any legal challenges, in order for it to make its way to the Supreme Court, it would very likely occur following the appointment of a new justice to the bench. And that, ladies and gentlemen, changes the entire
landscape. If Kennedy retires, you mean?
Should Kennedy retire, or if there is an expiration by one of the other justices, that it very well could come at a time when President Trump has the opportunity to appoint.
And President Trump is the kind of president, you know, there are other, even presidents like President Bush, President Trump is going to go, I don't care what kind of chaos ensues. I am going to nominate a conservative, strict constructionist. Because you know the left will howl.
Yes.
You're going to throw the Supreme Court out of balance and all that. And President Trump's going, I don't care.
Yeah.
And that's, we have a better shot at replacing a Kennedy or someone else from the left with a real conservative with Trump, President Trump, than anyone else in recent memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, Governor Bryant said this. He said, quote, as I have repeatedly said, I want Mississippi to be the safest place in America for an unborn child. Wow. House Bill 1510 will help us achieve that goal.
Wow.
That's a bold statement.
That is incredible. A very, very bold statement.
All That's right. Incredible. What other issue do we have we want to try to?
Well, as we sit in this studio out in Sacramento, California, the Attorney General of the United States is making formal an announcement that his Justice Department is suing the state of California over California's sanctuary laws. Now, there was big news last week. You remember the mayor of Oakland, California, put an alert out because ICE agents had let the city officials know that they were planning a raid to go after people living in that area illegally. Particularly people living in that area illegally, entered the country illegally, and had already committed other crimes.
Right.
All right? She puts it out there, hey, they're coming for you. And the ICE agents still managed to arrest about 200, but they said about 800 got away because of what she did. So here we are just a few days later. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions, he's in Sacramento right now making the announcement. These are the laws that they're going after, the California laws that are out there protecting people who are in the country illegally. One of them being, it bars police from asking people about their citizenship status or participating in federal immigration enforcement activities. In other words, if you're a police officer out there in California, you cannot help the ICE agents. You get hauled into court if you dare help the ICE agents.
Which is a violation of federal law because you are required as a law enforcement officer in a municipality or a state trooper, for example, that if you have in your custody a person who has what's called an ICE hold, an ICE detainer, that means the federal government has notified through the NCIC, the National Crime Information Center database, has notified law enforcement entities countrywide that this person, X, has entered the country illegally. If you are aware from them, you let us know. They don't have to arrest them. They have to know. They detain them, and they notify Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Refusing to do that is a violation of federal law.
Oh, now see, I didn't know that. I thought you could just turn a blind eye. You don't have to participate in the arrest process, but you do, because of federal law, have to let ICE know. What? Know where they are or know that you
that they're in your custody.
Past? Oh,
that they're in your custody.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Now, here's another California law that the Attorney General Jeff Sessions is going after. There's another law that prohibits employers from letting immigration agents enter work sites or view employee files without a subpoena or a warrant, which is aimed at preventing workplace raids.
Yes.
So that's another, and then another stops local governments from contracting with for-profit companies and ICE to hold immigrants.
Uh-huh.
Justice Department saying this violates federal law.
And so let me explain what's happening here, because there are some for-profit detention companies, for example, that if you have a person X in a local jail where they were held on a local charge, the local charge has already been processed, but they continue to be detained, the private entity would provide the funds for meals and other things until ICE comes and picks them up. What that law is saying is that the local jail cannot have an agreement with Corporation B that would hold them until the ICE agents come to pick them up. So it would no longer be on the local law enforcement entity's dime. It would be that private company and the federal government. But that state law in California would prohibit the local jail, for example, from entering into those agreements.
Well, this one on the employers, though, this is baffling to me. A boss at a workplace, ICE agents arrive at his door. This law says the employer must not allow the ICE agents to come in.
You pass a law that would force an employer to obstruct federal justice.
Exactly.
Well, let me ask how this kind of thing plays out. This is part of my concern about how the country is facing possible anarchy at some point. Mm-hmm. Is that so? We saw Attorney General Jeff Sessions making the speech. I don't know what the content of it was. I guess we'll find out in the hours to come. So what you're laying out is violation of federal law. How does that play out in terms of that conflict? We're talking about the Oakland mayor. Let's just use her as an example.
Yes.
She finds out that ICE is going to do a raid. She lets them all know so they can all scatter.
Yeah.
How does that play out in terms of that conflict between federal and state law?
She is literally put herself in jeopardy of a potential obstruction of justice investigation and indictment. Because what she literally is doing is operating in such a fashion, because the only reason why she would have that information is because she is the mayor. Hmm. And so using her position as mayor to inform people who have violated federal law to skirt arrest and detention based on their violations of that federal law, that you could have some obstruction of justice charges filed against her. There are some people who are more liberal than I am who say, well, yeah, but she didn't have the particular knowledge of the individuals who committed the crimes. Well, let me ask you the question. If I, as a normal citizen, I won't use you guys, let's say I know Benny Blue Blood, and I don't know what crimes he may have committed, but I know that the police are looking for Benny Blue Blood. If I got Benny Blue Blood in my house, would I be charged and convicted for harboring a felon? Yes. This is one of those types of crimes that have not the specific mens rea or mental culpability, but the general understanding. Mm-hmm. The only reason why you would notify people of that is because you know that they would likely be detained. And so to get more specifically to your point, the way we historically navigated these issues, we go back to a wonderful constitutional concept called federalism. What is the division of authority between the states and the federal government? The states individually do not have the jurisdiction to advance immigration policy. The only reason why these states and these mayors are positing these positions is because they don't like the federal immigration policy. And if that is their contention, they need to use their positions and their ability to lobby the federal government, but they don't have the lawful ability to skirt the law.
Well, Abe, isn't this what they do with everything? They don't go about the constitutional means of getting things changed, policy changes, because they know it won't work. Yep. They don't have enough members of Congress. They don't have enough senators. They don't have the White House. And maybe they have trouble in courts. So they just unilaterally do things that they're not constitutionally allowed to. But this is what they do with everything, is it not?
Yeah, and this is why Jeff Sessions' decision, which I've been waiting on for some time, I'm glad he's doing it now. That's why his decision to file a suit against them is the appropriate cause of action. Because I would love to see a federal judge tell me that states have the authority legally to usurp federal law, to usurp black letter law because they simply don't like the law.
Right.
You do not have
that
authority.
So let me just see if this scenario plays out, and then you tell me what our options are going forward. So apparently these are federal criminal charges that would be lodged against the mayor of Oakland. We're going back to using her as the example. Let's say she is convicted, and then she appeals her conviction to the federal appellate system, the Ninth Circuit, and the Ninth Circuit sides with her, overturns the conviction. Is that the way it could play out? And if it did, and the Ninth Circuit said that, what are we looking at in terms of federalism in this country?
Yeah, that would be a case that the Supreme Court, in my opinion, they would take that up very quickly. Because if they do not take that up immediately, you have the dissolution of the United States of America, to where you now have individual states who develop their own immigration policy, and it becomes irrelevant to the states what the federal government says concerning immigration, because each state at that moment would then develop its own
policy. Well, because if let's just say for some reason a court or even the Supreme Court ruled that California can kind of do its own thing when it comes to immigration, even though they have no authority to, then they can defy federal law. Well, what keeps Mississippi from banning abortion altogether?
Absolutely nothing.
But Mississippi would have a better argument because it's not in federal law that abortion is legal. It's simply a one court opinion.
You're absolutely
right. But that's the kind of that's the other end of the spectrum that it could be if California decides to allow us to defy federal law.
And it's the logical extension of what federal judges have been doing all along.
Right.
Because they have. Maybe they've had the support of those on the progressive secular humanist left, but what they have been doing is basically subverting our federalist system as well as the Constitution. That's why I said we could be looking at anarchy.
That literally the hypothetical scenario you posed, Ed, and that you followed up on, Ed, is the equivalent of legal anarchy in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And you would not have a cohesive nation state.
Right.
You would have individual fiefdoms that have all kind of other implications down the line if this type of madness isn't reined in immediately.
Mm-hmm. There's a document I was reading earlier today on specific wording of the federal laws that probably the mayor of Oakland has broken. Mm-hmm. And Abe, you're up on this, I know. U.S. Code 2A, 18, mm-hmm. I guess it's Section 18, U.S. Mm-hmm. Code 2A. Aiding and abetting.
Yes.
This is the exact word of the statute. Whoever commits an offense against the United States or aids, abets, counsels, commands, induces, or procures its commission is punishable as a principal.
And that's the law of parties, because the people who are skirting lawful detention have done so with the assistance of the mayor of the city of Oakland.
So how could any court say the laws of California, they're not contravening anything, any federal statute? How could you say that?
Hey, Ben, to me, it seems like that it's even more offensive or maybe even more punishable that for a citizen to, you know, notify a criminal that the police are coming or whatever or harbor them. But when you have a mayor who has access to information, law enforcement information, you know, her office was probably notified that, hey, and her police department, ICE will be here next week, and we want to let you know that way you don't get random calls saying we got the feds in here and you didn't know about it.
That's exactly right.
Respect.
That's exactly
and,
right.
But when you use your position to work against those who are trying to work with you, it seems like that might be more offensive.
It absolutely is, because you have the aiding and abetting being facilitated due to her electoral position as mayor.
Right.
I mean, that that is an offense against our national government of the highest order. I mean, think about that in other terms. Think about it hypothetically speaking. You have a terrorist who, I don't know, named Osama bin Laden, who was in California, but because the mayor of California doesn't like the federal position and looking to arrest Osama bin Laden, she notifies him that you may want to leave town because the feds are on their way.
You know, it's almost like when you go to get a warrant as a prosecutor or a law enforcement, you go to get a warrant to raid a house. You think there's drugs in there or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the judge who signs off on the warrant calling the criminal.
It is the literal equivalent of that, saying, hey, by the way, I just signed this warrant.
Yeah.
You may want to get the dope out of the house.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine? Now, of course, if Attorney General Jeff Sessions and the Justice Department is successful in this, this also would be applied then, correct me if I'm wrong, Abe, to Chicago, mm-hmm. Sanctuary City, Philadelphia, New York.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure of Austin officially. Austin, Texas has a
city.
They're
moving that way.
They're moving in that direction. In fact, the sheriff of Travis County,
that's
you see
Austin.
That story this morning?
I saw that. I don't need the $25 million to give body armor for our police officers.
Explain to our listeners about that story. We talked about it in our story meeting.
The sheriff of Travis County, which encompasses Austin, there's $25 million available for her to purchase armor for her deputies.
We talking bulletproof vests,
right.
Body armors, things that will protect them from being shot.
She's turned that down because she doesn't want ICE agents in her jurisdiction, because we have to protect the illegals living in our jurisdiction. So she's putting illegals ahead of the safety of her own deputies.
Yes.
Now, my understanding is, help me understand this a little bit, the money for the vests, the armor, yes. body armor, is not part of ICE operations. It's just that if you're going to take the $25 million, you have to cooperate with ICE.
That's right.
Okay, it's a string attached.
Sure.
Okay, and she's severing the string, saying, I don't want to cooperate.
But let me add this right. It's a string that is attached that is required by federal law. That's okay. The thing. It's not as if this is a newly invented string. Mm-hmm. This is the exact same type of funding structure that happens to law enforcement agencies the country around, because right. The law enforcement agencies know if they have that, they don't have to go out of their way to look for illegal aliens to right. arrest them. But if in the lawful execution of their duties, they come across, like say on the DWI arrest or any type of arrest that, oh, by the way, this person has an ICE detainer, has an ICE hold, which is a request from the federal government that says, hey, if Abraham Hamilton is arrested in your jurisdiction, hold him and call me.
Yeah, because we're talking about someone who maybe didn't show up for a hearing, you know, because their stay, you know, their visa expired, whatever. Yes. So that's what, it's kind of like a warrant, right?
It is.
Detainer.
It's the equivalent of a warrant within the federal immigration construct, if that makes sense. So simply saying, this person is here illegally. If you come across them in the lawful discharge of your duties, hold them and let us know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And ICE has a legal requirement to come after so many hours of notification to pick them up.
Yeah. Abe, let me ask you this question. Are you familiar with the federal judge in Maryland ruling on DACA yesterday?
No, I hadn't read that yet.
Okay, President Trump put this out yesterday. Federal judge in Maryland has just ruled that, quote, President Trump has the right to end DACA. If you have six different federal judges and six different rulings, which one do you go by, the latest?
No, that's why we have to, technically, the way it applies is each court has jurisdiction. So if it's a district court judge, then that would be the ruling in that district. If it's an appellate court judge, that would be the ruling in that appellate circuit, which is why you have what's called circuit splits. When you have disagreements between the circuits, it compels the Supreme Court to say something on this issue to provide commonality and uniformity among.
Do you think the Supreme Court will eventually weigh in on DACA and issue a final verdict?
It depends on what Congress does. If Congress takes action on it, the Supreme Court may say this issue is moot because there's been congressional action on it.
Okay.
But if Congress does not do anything on it, the Supreme Court may have to do something.
Here's the part that has puzzled me. DACA is an executive order from President Barack Obama. It's not a law.
It's not a law. It's not a law.
And so the incoming president says, we're not going to go along with this. It had a shelf life, that executive order from Obama. In fact, I guess it expired March 5th.
And all President Trump said is, I'm not renewing the executive order. He didn't even rescind it.
Right. But a judge says,
no, you can't.
You can't do that. What law is he quoting?
Well, and so is that ruling in effect compelling the president to sign the extension?
That's what they're attempting to accomplish, yes. And the thing that added insult to injury, people forget this. DACA was a part of the overall DREAM Act.
Right.
Part of it has already been ruled unconstitutional by the courts in turning the DAPA provisions. People forget that the courts have already said that was unconstitutional. Already.
This is insanity.
It is creating legal anarchy.
Yeah.
Well, folks, just in case you thought we were just scaremongers here when we talk about these kind of things, you can stare into the abyss. What's the old saying from someone smarter than me? Stare in the abyss at the abyss, and sometimes it stares right back or smile. I think you smile at death. I don't know, whatever it was. That's what we're looking at. We're staring anarchy in the face, and it's smiling back.
Mm.
All right, I sure messed that up. Thank you, Abe. We got 5 minutes of news, folks. We'll be back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.